prophecies. What I chose to do is, because of the timing of the holidays and we'll be out of town for 10 days, rather than to get one Holy Spirit class started and then break it for 2 weeks and then come back, what we're going to do is have one more Psalms class, and then we'll have maybe two standalone or a different kind of approach to some of the other Psalms. And on this one, on the Messianic Psalms, what's interesting about it is I've not done all Messianic prophecies. I mean, you have them in Isaiah and Jeremiah 23 and such as that. So I've not tried to go for 300 Messianic prophecies. I stayed only in the book of Psalms and only ones that we haven't talked about. Because tonight we'll deal with Psalm 110 that deals with some of that. We've dealt with Psalm 2 that has Messianic references. And what I've done is this. It's another one you can't do on the way to church. It just won't work. Because what I've asked is I give the Messianic prophecy from a particular psalm and I cite it. And what I've done as we've moved through the psalm class, on purpose, I've made it increasingly more challenging because you're mature students rather than fill in the blank to true and false. So on this one, you'll see the Messianic prophecy on the left-hand side. Then I say, where is it cited in the New Testament? How can you find that? And there's different ways. One way might be, what's that?
A keyword.
A keyword, and how would you track the keyword? Okay, if you have a concordance, whether paper or digital, what's another way you can do it? A commentary would get you there. If you have in your Bible a marginal reference, a lot of times that will get you over there. Another way you can do it, and the reason I'm telling you this, rather than you come back next week and say, oh, I couldn't find anything, so, is you can Google it. You type in the phrase, let his homestead be made desolate, or whatever it is, and Google will show you, oh, well, here's that passage in the Old Testament, and there'll be a New Testament reference to it. So one of the things that I've asked to do is find the reference for each one of these. General, a couple I provide because I'm asking a different direction in the question. So generally I'll ask, where is it found? Under what circumstances or situation is it fulfilled? And then if there's a conundrum, a difficulty with it, I'll say something like, how do you solve this problem? Because, and it forces you to say, I got to look at the text. Maybe you have to go back to the context of Psalms. It says blah, 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 blah. You know, he'll give his angels charge concerning you lest you dash your foot against a stone. Well, you have to go back and I'll ask a question about that. Does that only apply to Jesus? Did it rightly apply to Jesus? And if so, why? And I'll give you the context. You got to go back to the context and say, yes, it does. No, it doesn't. Here's why. So anyhow, it is just two pages, but there's, you know, get those little water wings flapping in there and give you some good, hopefully interesting challenges and things along that line. All right. And that will be Thursday, correctly, because the holidays, we thought, you know what, a lot of times people have family things on the Wednesday coming up on the holidays. And I thought, our midweek for the next 2 weeks will be on Thursdays. So December 26th and January 2nd. Now, on January 2nd, I would be here, except I'm going to be in Colorado. And so I had thought I was going to be here, but because of flight and times and cost and whatnot, it worked out better if I bumped it one day. All right. So I'll be here next week on December 26th, and we'll cover Messianic prophecies from the book of Psalms. All right. Last week, as we got through, I think we left off on Psalm 46. And so now we have tonight to cover Psalm 56, 110, and 119. And they're neat psalms, and there's some cool things about them. So in Psalm 56, the author is who? Huh, imagine that, David. Why? Well, he's the author of half of the psalms, but not all of the psalms. And so he says, "Be gracious, O God, for man has trampled upon me." And so, looking at the heading, what circumstances is David facing?
The Philistines have him captured or cornered in Gath.
Yes. And so, why would he be down there in Philistine territory anyhow? That's his fault for getting down there with the Philistines. Except that.
He was chased down there.
Oh, yeah. You got a massive problem. The monarch of Israel is trying to kill you. So, okay, I'll hide out among his enemies. But in this case, the enemy of my enemy is not necessarily my friend. In this case, he's also an enemy. And he says, so here is David's afraid of Achish, the king of the Philistines, in 1 Samuel 21:10 and following. He said, "When I am afraid, I will put my trust in you." Why would he be afraid of the Philistines anyhow? Tom, can you give us a little insight? Why would David be afraid of the Philistines? And there's...
There
you are. Oh, minor little issue. David, the hero, the giant killer, happened to kill the giant that was the Philistine's hero. He's the guy that wiped him out and cut off his head and took his sword. So he's not their favorite person.
The giant family is still mad.
That's a good point. You know, you got all the McCoys there saying, "Hey, man, we are looking to get you." And so it's interesting, as we have a little bit of background in the Bible, here's what's going on to make that kind of thing happen. Verse 4b in the second half of it says, "I shall not be afraid. What shall man do to me?" Wait a minute. But you are concerned about the Philistines killing you. And my question is, what can man do to you? Well, he could kill you, he could torture you, cut off your head, he could enslave you. So what does it mean? I mean, he's in danger. And he says, why would I be afraid? Deb, what do you have for that? How did you answer that?
He's human.
Yes.
I mean, we all get afraid.
Yes. Yes. When I preached in Renton, there were two elders there, Joe Breezy, Ross Hines. Ross Hines was stocky, built like a tank, and he just never seemed to be afraid of anything. And I asked him, in fact, there's two people that I know that never seemed to be afraid of anything, and one was Albert C. down in Sumner, the other was Ross Hines. But that was just on the outward appearance. And Ross said, yeah, you do get butterflies. He said, you just teach them to fly in formation. I go, okay. What he's saying is you do get that. But you go forward and make good things happen anyhow. The other thing, Albert C., who Paul Mitchell knew, I don't think anybody else knew, Mike Walker knew, is he was about my size, but absolutely fearless. Just, we would go and sometimes challenging things. Man, he never batted an eyelash. And I asked him one time, I said, "Albert, are you afraid of anything?" And he had this southern drawl from Apopka, Florida, a swamp logger. He said, "Well, a gorilla." A gorilla? Well, come to find out, he was serious about that, because way back in the days, you could do all kinds of things that you'd never get away with now, is being politically incorrect and animal rights advocate problems. He was down some little obscure place, and they had an arena. I don't know how high the walls were. Maybe it was a cage. And so they would pay somebody. You could earn some amount of money, maybe $500, if you could go three rounds with an orangutan. And I think the orangutan had gloves on. He said, but man, this big guy gets in there, that orangutan beat him to death, and he could hang on to the bars up above, and he's got him with his feet going. And so Albert thought, man, I am, no, Albert could log in the swamp waters, I mean, water moccasins, and wade through it, chainsaw over his head. That didn't bother him. Gorillas did. Anyhow, so there is that human element where in Romans 8, 31 and 32, I just says, does Romans 8, 31 and 32 help any? What did anybody get for that? Because you had that as part of the, I'll say the question over there. Linda, did you get anything for that?
I wasn't here.
Oh my goodness, we're here now. What's up with that? And so, Mariana, what you got for that?
Well, I just put that God protected David and he'll protect us.
And think about, in Romans 8, 31 and 32, it said, if God is for us, who can be against us? Well, couldn't the Roman government be against you? Well, yeah. Couldn't the pagans be against you? Yeah, but they can't ultimately win. We will win the battle ultimately. You know, don't be afraid what man can do to the body. Mm-hmm. Linda.
Romans 8:32, it says, he who did not spare his own son but delivered him over for us all, how will he not also with him freely give us all things? So we can be afraid of something. But in the big picture, even though it looks like we are defeated by that thing, in God's plan, we can be winners.
Yes, good for you. That's exactly it. And so there's that human side. You do feel it. They say, God, I'll put my confidence in you. We're going to get through this, and it's going to be okay. In verse 8, here's an interesting thing. Larry Haverstock was talking about the God's Book of Life. In Psalm 56 and verse 8, he said, put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in thy book? What is God's bottle? What does that mean? Mitchell, what do you think about that? God's bottle. You've heard that for 40 years. So what's it mean?
Well, it totally sounds poetic.
So God doesn't have a Grecian or a Chinese vase up there, yeah? So what's that mean?
God is aware of our tears.
Yes. And I'm not going to lose track of it. What if, husbands, every tear your wife ever cried, you had a little bottle and you caught every tear? Wow. I hadn't thought about that till just this moment. You know, it's, how touching. God is saying, what you feel means everything to me, and I won't forget it. I'm going to have you the picture of as though I've caught every tear in a bottle. I've written every one down in a book. You go, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
I was just thinking you save what's important.
Yes. Yes. That is, God is telling us, I know what's important, and what's important to you is important to me. Really, really inspirational. In 2 Kings 20 and verse 5, God saw and knew Hezekiah's tears. In Malachi 3, that Larry mentioned as well Sunday evening, that there's a book of God's remembrance. Now, obviously, God doesn't have to do like you and I, say, yeah, I got to remember, here's my schedule for tomorrow. But it's just that imagery that shows, I won't forget. I won't forget you. I won't forget how important you are. I won't forget how important the things are to you and those things that hurt you. Okay, then you come on down to verse 12. He said, your vows are binding on me, O God. So what's God's law about vows? And he does have a law about vows. And that is?
Keep them.
Yeah, keep them. If you say you're going to do, just like we do, if you say you're going to do, do what you say you're going to do and make sure that that happens. And then in verse 13, he said, you have delivered my soul from death. Think about how that worked in this particular case. How exactly did God deliver David in the interaction with the Philistines right here that wanted to take his life? What did David do? Paulette, what did David do? What do you got there? Okay. Larry, you got that for us?
He did, but okay. Yeah. In 1 Samuel 21, but the servants of Achish said unto him, is this not David the king of the land? Did they not sing of this one as they danced, saying, Saul has slain his thousands? David
is slain his 10,000. So they, I recognized David. Now, how did God get him out of that?
Acted like a crazy guy.
That's right. He was crazy. I go, so now, here's a thing that's really, really interesting and challenging. It's a moral question. Here's the bottom of the page. We may not all agree on this. I am not putting out an imprimatur of this is the way everybody's got it. It's just challenging. Was it ethical for David to pretend to be insane? Why or why not? Or is it ambiguous? Well, you're kind of hard. Or is it impossible to know? And so kind of the follow-up is it immoral to deceive? What about liars? What about hypocrisy? Linda, what do you
think? He thought he was using his brain. He was in a bad spot in that house. He knew how to get out of it, and he just used his brain. God gave him his brain, and he used it.
Yes. Let's take it in pieces. There are going to be several pieces of this puzzle. Is that part true? Is that part valid? Was he scriptural in using his brain that way? Bob, what do you think?
In Matthew, it says to be wise as a serpent.
Yes.
And you need, in the world, you need to be able to think as a snake does so you don't fall in the snake's trap. So when you're walking down the street and you see some guys coming toward you and they're carrying baseball bats and stuff, and it's like 11 o'clock at night, and they don't have any gloves or anything else with them but just the bats, you might want to try to avoid an encounter with them.
Or start pitching some baseballs real quick. Okay, now great. And what I want to do is I want to toss out some interesting things. I want us to chew on this. This is an interesting one because that would seem to be reasonable. I want to toss out some interesting little, yeah, but what ifs. So you get to chew on it, all right? That's all we're going with this. Now, so let me try this. In relationship to Revelation 21:8, all liars shall have their part in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone. Is it ethical to lie? No. Ephesians 4:15, speaking the truth in love. 1 Peter 2, verse 1, put aside all guile and hypocrisy. Now, I'm obviously throwing that out there because that is an intellectual or philosophical challenge, because we say, hey, he's being smart so you don't get killed. But how do we work it with this other part? So now as we wrestle with Matthew 10:16, be as wise as serpents, Revelation 21:8, all liars, 1 Peter 2 and in verse 1, putting aside all guile and hypocrisy. So now we're going to be chewing on this bit of beef jerky and say, now what do we do with this? Marianna.
Well, the way I read it, that's just use the couldn't see any other way to escape. He was outnumbered. He was surrounded. He was captured.
Now, that's true. And I'm going to have some fun with you because I want to keep chewing on this a little bit to where you feel like I've got it. And even if somebody comes at me this way or that way, I can defend it. I would say, yes, he did act. However, the meaning of hypocrisy comes from the Greek to act. So if now you're chewing on that part. And there's half a dozen more things I want. So I want you to be, Linda's looking at me going, how about that?
Are you justified when your life is in danger?
See, there's going to be the issue. And we're hold that, because then it's going to be, is there, and one of the principles we'll talk about, is there a higher law? And if so, when does it come into play? Hand all the way in the back, and then? Would you move up a little? There's nobody going to be able to hear you, including me. And while you do that, Bob, why don't you share your thought?
Well, Jesus told his apostles when they were out going from town to town to town that when they were happy to see us, stay there and teach them, and when they weren't receptive and didn't want you there, you got up and you left, and you went, and when you got out of town, you even shook the dust from your sandals.
Yes.
So don't stick around where you're not welcomed and wanted. Get out of there, is what he's telling. And Jesus.
And we'd agree with that.
Time, yeah. And Jesus, he was in a big crowd, and they were going to try to grab him up and arrest him, but through his powers, he just kind of
slipped out
the crowd and left.
Yes.
So it doesn't say go fight them and take them on, but it just says just kind of go leave.
And now, I would agree with you to leave.
And so if you can, to run away.
Yes. Nobody would argue with running away. Am I allowed, under what circumstances, could I, should I, is thou shalt not lie, is that a universal absolute?
Yes. Save the lives of the spies.
Yes. Was she justified?
Yes, she was.
And your reason to maintain that is?
She was in Hebrews 11.
Yeah. That's right. Now, that is notable. She is one of the worthies. She acted by faith. Let me toss out a couple other things. So I want to give some support and then chew on it. Say, is that true? Could the Jews break the Sabbath under any circumstance?
Yes.
Yes. Like what?
Their ox.
That's right. In Luke 14 and verse 5, if your child or an ox got stuck in a ditch or fell down a well, you don't say, son, tread water, I'll be back tomorrow. They realize you should not work on the Sabbath, but sometimes there's the implementation of a higher law. Here's an interesting one. What about the Egyptian midwives that were supposed to murder the Hebrew male babies? What did they do, Linda?
They said that the babies were
lively. Yeah, the women are vigorous. That wasn't actually so. Now, the interesting thing that is talked about is that God blessed them. You go, huh? They didn't tell the truth. They saved a life. So, in Matthew 9 and verse 13, he said, I desire compassion and not sacrifice. Did God desire to the Jews sacrifice? Yes, that was the law, but he's showing there is a higher law, and that is compassion. So, and I'm about halfway through now, is a lie to save a life an act of compassion? If it is it justified, and does it take a superior position? Yeah. Mitchell's going, Bob Wielander.
In those cases that were brought up about
Egyptian, Edwise, both of them, if they had been caught in their lie, probably would have forfeited their lives.
Yes.
So, it's the example given was that they were risking their lives to do...
save another's life.
...deed
yes.
that God would bless them for.
Yes.
So, I mean, they're not just lying for personal...
That's a great point. That's
got
a,
nothing really out of it for themselves.
They're not lying to get out of trouble. And that's an interesting thing as you weigh that.
Soldiers will commit suicide knowing sure death to save their platoon or another soldier.
They will risk suicide, yeah.
That's in the same basket.
Okay. Could the priests break the Sabbath lawfully? Could the priests work on the Sabbath? And they had to. Matthew chapter 12 and verse 7. Because... It's a Ten Commandment law. The fourth commandment, thou shalt not work on the Sabbath, except under certain circumstances. Now, in Mark 3, verses 4 and 5, from the Pharisees' viewpoint, did Jesus violate the Sabbath when he healed on it? He said, here's the withered hand, stretch out your hand, be healed. So, is there a higher law issue of in this regard to Sabbath? And withered hand isn't a life. When they rolled grain and ate it on the Sabbath, Jesus said that didn't violate it. And so, and I've got some more things for us to chew on. Because would I talk about this on a Sunday morning with babes in Christ? No, this is a mature Christian thing where you've got a background and you're weighing and chewing and say, how do these scriptures fit together? Linda.
Oh, okay. I was thinking. Okay, the withered hand. The withered hand. Eating the grain was going to keep them alive. The withered hand, the Pharisees just had bent nose. So they weren't so concerned about that it was being done on the Sabbath. They just didn't like it.
Yes, and Jesus said, Is it better to save a life or to kill? You guys are trying to kill me. You want to kill me on the Sabbath, but I'm trying to help somebody. So we've looked at eating grain, healing, getting your son out of a well. You're not supposed to work, but those things would be allowable. You shouldn't lie, but Rahab was justified in saving, and the midwives were blessed in saving. Paul Mitchell, all the way in the back, and then Bob.
So far, you've been talking about radical choices, you know. this or that.
Yes, yes.
And David and the showbread. Now, unless those guys were Auschwitz victims that were about to drop dead, why were they eating that bread?
Now, there was a reason why David asked for the bread. And the reason is, and by the way, does anybody remember where he was when he asked for the showbread? For 500 points. No? Yes, but where was the point B that he got to? And the priests were slaughtered there. And it was on Nob. Because he was given by the priest, maybe the high priest, Goliath's sword and the showbread that ordinarily you wouldn't eat. But he's trying to escape from Saul. So it's a life and death thing. Now where I thought Paul was going to go with this, and this is a huge issue, so far we've been talking about life and death issues. Isn't that what people normally lie about in corporate? Oh no, they lie about for everything. We're talking about some extreme situation that virtually never happens. Does happen, but in our lifetime, almost never, maybe never. Here's a couple more things. Ordinarily, truth would be the higher law. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 25. Putting aside falsehood, speak the truth. Leviticus 19:11, both the Sabbath and thou shalt not bear false witness, you shall speak the truth, are both part of the Ten Commandments. So it's not like, well, one doesn't matter and the other is. They're both Ten Commandment laws. Does the law of higher law of compassion allow disinformation in war? So now what we're going to do is we're going to start lying to the whole other side. The Germans are, they went that way. I don't know. I never saw them. So you have that to weigh. Brother Bob.
What I kind of would go back on the working on the Sabbath just for a second, in that they stopped at certain points where, you don't bake bread on the Sabbath.
Yes.
But can you slice the bread on the Sabbath? Oh, yeah, you can't. We don't slice it on the Sabbath either. Can you butter it on the Sabbath? Well, that group over there, they butter on the Sabbath, but if ours isn't buttered before the Sabbath, we eat it dry.
Yes.
And you get to the point where, well, we don't eat bread on the Sabbath. We don't eat anything on the Sabbath because we don't want to work our jaws. I mean, there's a point where you can take it to a ridiculous point. You forgot the wine down in the cellar, so you can't go get wine on the Sabbath. Or you forgot to open the wine. Or forgot to pour the wine. There's extremes where you get taken.
What was the law? Forget about, for the moment, what did the Pharisees say? What was the law? Law said, thou shalt not do any work on the Sabbath. Not you, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, your ox, your donkey, or the stranger that is in your gates. Now, that much we know. But having said that, then you have to deal with what they wrestled with. That's right. Now, what do we define as work? Is it moving our jaws? And so the rabbis would have all this meticulosity of, well, you could walk. Obviously, you could walk over here and take a drink of water, if it's two steps to the table, but you can't walk 5 miles. So seven-eighths of a mile. You could carry a loaf of bread, but if it's so big, it takes two men to carry it between you. And then you cannot kindle a fire. And then they deal with, and I'll just deal with a couple of these things that fascinate me, and then we'll take Rhonda's hand, is now the observant Jews try to preserve the Sabbath. And so there is the law of kindling. You shall not kindle a fire because that is causing energy to be expended in the burning of the wood or coal or gas or electric stove or this or that. But it has other problems. If you want to get to the synagogue, how are you going to get there? You're going to have to start your car, your engine, which ignites a fire, which inherently is against the law of kindling. They really struggle with all these things. They said, unless we do that, we can't get the Sabbath. So they struggle with it. So they have these pieces of their law. They're trying to figure out, how do I observe them? Rather than just saying, look, it just makes sense that they wanted the rabbi to say exactly here, and it was Rhonda. Wow. Isn't that amazing?
It was a law that they weren't allowed to answer or use the phone on the Sabbath.
See, we look at them as, isn't that silly? But guess what? We are struggling here with the application of the law of truth. And how does that work with mercy? And I have never talked about this in a class situation in 50 years. Brother Tony.
I don't get paid, that's a chore.
I like it. Now, is that how you women feel about fixing meals? That's right.
I know that about
fair enough. Okay, hand up front.
They made
much more difficult for themselves by limiting those things. But we do too.
Yes, yes, because we're trying to do what's right, and how do we figure this or that? And I have shared with people individually several times, the late Robin Williams, when asked what he had been religiously, he said, I'm Episcopalian. He said, actually, that's Catholic light. It has all the pomp and only half the guilt. So you get to, don't worry about it. And so people that are conscientious, we try to figure out, how does this work? Where other people say, who cares? You tell a little white lie, this, that. Couple more things. Does the higher law of love allow one to defend themselves and their family with lethal weapons? What do I feel like? Is that a legitimate argument? And it seems to be, at least our group. There's other groups that say, no. And so that aspect, thou shalt not kill, probably better translated, thou shalt not murder. And then you have to weigh what is murder. If somebody's running down the street with your television set, may you lawfully shoot them? No, that's murder. If they're breaking in your house, they got an axe and say, I'm going to kill everybody, and you drop them at the foot of the stairs, drag the body all the way in. That's right. And so there was... one person said, if a person's breaking in your window and you shoot them, make sure they fall inside rather than outside.
But Paul, isn't that the clear and present danger versus a...
Yes. If somebody's out in the street swearing at you, you can't shoot them.
But if there's a clear and present danger, yes. Every mother's going to jump out there with whatever she can grab in her hand to defend her children.
No.
But that's showing that fear.
Yes.
That
see, I've never chewed on this with the class, because you don't want young Christians, of course, I hope nobody watching this goes away thinking, that's right, it's right to lie and just take off. We're talking about defending your family. Does the higher principle of sacrificing truth for compassion apply in the workplace? Can I lie to save my job? Can I lie to save someone's feelings? And the answer is no. Because we've talked about things that have to do with the preservation of life, not comfort. A couple hands up front, up and back and in the middle.
When you were saying, does it apply at work and things like that? When we talk about compassion, we never speak of having compassion. I'm having compassion for myself. We're always having compassion for another person, for their good.
So should you spare their feelings and lie? The answer is no. You can be diplomatic.
Yeah.
You can be thoughtful. You can be kind without being deceitful. I've said for years, men, if your wife puts on a dress and she says, honey, how's that look? If that's not your favorite, you need to be discreet. You say, honey, that doesn't show off your best futures. Because you're being kind, but you're not deceiving. Jim in the back.
Best thing to say sometimes is nothing.
Yes. Good. Paul Mitchell.
So when Peter denied Christ three times because his life would be in peril, was that sin?
Yes. Yes, isn't that a great, I said yes, and isn't that a great example? Isn't that a great example? He was rebuked, he denied, because Jesus said, if you deny me, I'll deny you. Here was your opportunity to make a statement to everybody, and you didn't, and his life was on the line. Isn't that?
If I denied knowing you because my life was in peril, is that a sin?
Isn't that interesting? Chew on that. And I'm not leaving that, but think about that for a minute, and let's mull that over. It certainly is for Christ. Jim.
I think about the heart Peter had, though. When he realized what he'd done, he was broken hearted.
Yeah.
That was the
one thing that Jesus did not, well, Jesus didn't deny any of their interrogation. He just didn't answer.
Yes.
Until they got to that point.
Yes.
Are you the Son of God?
And yes. He said, you say correctly, I am. Good. Yes. Now think about, when did Jesus confront Peter about his lack of loyalty?
Well, he looked at him.
Okay, he did. And he's going from one place to another, and the cock crowed, and Peter denied, and Jesus looked at him. When did he confront him? When did he confront him after that?
After his resurrection.
Yes, and where?
By the lake.
Yes, at Galilee, and they were having breakfast. And he says, Peter, do you
love me?
And do you, agape? And he said, yes, Lord, you know I phileo you. I'm your, we're buds. Yeah. Feed my lambs. But Peter, do you act in my best interest? Lord, you know I really like you. And then the third time he said, do you phileo me? And he said, yes, Lord, you know I phileo you. And Peter was grieved. So, Mitchell, what's your conclusion on that?
Well, I just follow that train of thought. From God's perspective, it's okay in some lot of circumstances to do what otherwise would be sin, but on that one point, to deny the Messiah, that is, you cannot do that even if it kills you.
Yes. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I mean, I bring that out. I have a chew about that.
Yeah.
And I doubt that I'll ever understand it because that's from God's perspective.
Paul, I really appreciate you saying that because this isn't kind of, hey, let's just flip a coin and have fun. We're weighing the heaviest things you can weigh. And you're doing a great job of it. It's really amazing. Several hands. Linda first.
Well, in a practical application right now, as our society keeps going downhill, we could be faced with a situation, say in the workplace, where someone would say, well, what are you, a Christian? And you have to decide whether you're going to say yes or no and keep your job or not keep your job.
Yes.
And that didn't used to be the case in this country, but it certainly is now.
Yes. Marianne and then Bob.
Well, with Peter, that has a broader application because it was an example that Jesus, no matter, and there's many examples, how heinous our sin is, he will forgive us. That was a face-on forgiveness. That he forgives us if we approach him in the spirit. So
yes.
That's an example of that, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Bob.
Two things. First, it's backing up a bit to where David, he comes home and the town's been attacked. All the women are gone. All the children are gone. They've been taken away in captivity. He takes his army. They go chase. He comes to a river. He pares it down to 300, and they keep going. And what do they do with the 300? They wipe out the other army, almost to a man. I mean, they just, 300 of them, they take on a huge army, like 28,000 or something like that. I forget that. I don't have all the numbers down. But he did a lot of killing.
Yeah, Gideon is what you tell me. You tell me Gideon? Because I thought you said
David. It was David with his army goes and recovers his his
the families. Okay.
And he did a lot of killing, and he was a man after God's own eye. So God supported him in getting his family back.
Yes. And what's interesting about that is kind of where we started. If serial killers crash in your front door and they say, you got any more family here? You say, yeah, they're all hiding upstairs under the bed. Boy, you'd fight to the last breath. Now, what's interesting is we're weighing these heavy subjects. Are we in any way justifying lying? No. How do you weigh that in defense of others? And that's all we're saying. Paul, are you going to start debating this and writing papers on it? And no, people have to weigh that out. I had thought we're going to zip through this psalm, hit the next two, which was Psalm 110 and 119, which are great ones. But we've chewed on something. And for those of you that are watching this at home, I didn't try to answer this for anybody. I've just talked about some of the principles that people wrestle with because we want to be people of God. And how do you work that sacrifice versus compassion? On the Sabbath, you do or you don't. Paulette, did you have a hand? Yeah.
Because it was wrong.
Yeah. Okay, let me leave. We just got 4 minutes. Let me summarize some things with this. It has always been controversial. In the first and second century, they wrestled with if anybody was part of the army, like Roman army, they considered, hey, you're an apostate. In the Civil War, not only you had brother against brother, you had just vicious and vehement denunciation of not only the other side, some if you would even become part of the military or if you refused to. And so this class doesn't try to answer this for everybody. We've just looked at some of these principles and say, wow, God, this is a big deal, and we'll do the best that we can. Brother Larry.
Real quickly, when Peter sliced the ear off of Christ didn't tell him to get rid of the sword.
Yeah.
He says, just put it away.
Put it away. You're going to get us all killed.
Yeah.
Just interesting principles up front. Well, Cornelius resigned his commission 4 years later and became great stuff. Because you have that of Cornelius. Now, does that Cornelius was baptized, does it tell you what he did next year or anything else? That is a great principle, but we don't quite know what to do with that. And people will debate, I think he was... I can't make an argument strongly about Cornelius because Peter didn't say to resign the commission. But we didn't find out a whole lot of what else Peter told him to do, right? Because in the Great Commission, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, teaching them to
observe
what? All things whatsoever. So was he later told, and people would argue about this, and And so, generally where Christians are now, they leave that in the realm of personal conscience. If somebody said, I can't do that, then don't do that. If somebody said, I need to do that and defend it with my life, that we leave room for people to make that because God will be that final judge. Christians, what a neat, neat opportunity just to study God's word, weigh the principles and say, is that so, is that not? Paul Mitchell, why don't you lead our